This is SMQB's episode 23, talking finals, finals, and finals tonight. We have NBA finals to talk about, NHL finals. Will Milks Lightning take home another cup? And is anybody rooting for that? Also, All-Star Game preview for the MLB, and then a discussion of the NFL's investigation into the Washington football team, and a conversation about pot in the Olympics. And also a discussion of the legacy of Marv Albert as he walks away from the broadcast booth. Hope you enjoy the show. Leave us a 5-star review if you like it, and have a good time.
Tired of the same old sports analysis? Then you need the SMQBs podcast. They're 5 attorneys, they're sports fanatics, and they're ready to make their case. Welcome to Sports Talk with an Edge. From Dallas, Texas, Ryan Pope. Michael Rooster Phelan from Richmond, Virginia. Patrick Milk Meichler from Tampa. Toby House Milrod from Philadelphia. Chris Bison Nace from D.C.
SMQBs, episode 23. Never thought we'd get here. House, I've got a question for you. It is 4th and 10. You are down 5 points. You're on your own 12-yard line. Would you rather have Jalen Hurts or Zach Wheeler bringing the Eagles down the field?
Oh, Wheeler for sure.
There's no question. Wheeler's the only one. But seriously, we're going to be in Vegas this week or coming up. If you could lay some money on some Eagles records being broken this year, would it be Carson Wentz's record passing yards or his touchdown passes? You could take both of those. Which one are you taking?
There will be a prop bet made in Vegas on the Eagles winning the NFC East. And you guys are going to go right there with me.
Oh, wow. Okay. Oh, I like that.
I hear they're giving Joey Chestnut a tryout at quarterback.
You know, really, we should do a Joey Chestnut appreciation moment because
Is there a more dominant
athlete?
76, right?
76? Yeah, broke his own record of 75.
That's a Philadelphia record for you there, House.
Our fans want us to have the SMQBs to have an eating contest, so maybe we'll do that on one episode.
Which fans are those? I thought we only had a fan.
Thank you, Paul Miller, for suggesting that.
God, what?
How's everybody doing?
What happens after you eat 76 hot dogs? Good God.
Yeah.
That can't be good.
Yeah. I can't be good. Yeah, gotta go on for about a week, too, whatever it is.
My wife won't let me have one hot dog.
Episode 23, the GOAT episode.
Hey.
LeBron wore 23? Does LeBron wear 23?
Do you win any money if you win that? What do you get if you win the Nathan's hot dog eating contest?
I think the prize money is up to, you know, 6 figures.
It's legit now?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
You get free ride on the Coney Island roller coaster the rest of your life.
Ugh, I love it.
What's going on, everyone? A little July 4th holiday today.
This is our holiday special.
Yes. Happy July 4th.
Happy Independence Day, everyone.
That's right.
We shall not go lightly into the night.
I love it.
What's on tap, Bison? What do we got going today?
Well, we got to talk a little NBA, I think, don't we? We got the finals are set, but Rooster, I don't know. Is that the story?
Well, you know, there are two storylines, but before we get to that, I would commend to everybody an article in today's Washington Post about Monty Williams. Mm. He's a pretty amazing guy. He was a kind of a can't miss high school player in Maryland and was recruited by Notre Dame, went to Notre Dame. And then they found out that he had the same heart condition that killed Hank Gathers. Mm. And Notre Dame, to their credit, shut him down. 'Cause he was like, I'm fine. They shut him down and wouldn't let him play. So he went and got heart surgery, came back, played, and got drafted in 94 by the Knicks, 24th overall. I mean, that just shows you the guy's tremendous will. But he, you know, he had a serviceable NBA career, but he took over the Suns 2 years ago, and they were a they were a lottery team the previous 2 years, and now he's got them in the finals. It's an amazing story and a great read. You should check it out. He seems like a really, you know, he's the right coach for that team, the right coach at the right time. The storylines, you know, everybody, it's really popular to say, oh, what a boring finals. I'm looking forward to this finals. I think the Suns are an exciting team. The storyline for the Suns is going to be, you know, is this the CP3 finally, you know, fulfill his legacy of point god? I think if he wins this, if he wins the championship, he does. He took this team that, again, hadn't been to the finals for forever, 28 years since they've been to the finals, and he was the difference. You know, he's got his detractors. He's totally a flopper. We all talk about that, but he has taken this team and turned them into a finals team, and if they win it, he deserves to be placed up there among the very best point guards of all time. Does anyone disagree with that?
Well, this is his first finals ever, though, right, Rooster? I'm pretty sure.
Yeah.
So, I mean, he's a very special point guard, but to say that in his first finals ever, if he were to win it, he becomes one of the best of all time, I'm not sure about that. This has been a very special story, and he's a very special point guard, but is he up there with the all-timers? I'm not sure about that. I do want to ask you, though, Rooster, you said that you're looking forward to it. Are you looking forward to it even if Giannis doesn't play?
Yeah, I am. You know, that's the other storyline. Are the Bucks better off without Giannis? Everyone's speculating and talking about that. The Bucks are not better off without Giannis, but Giannis's teammates, the role players, stepped up magnificently when he was down. You know, you had guys like Brooks Lopez scoring 33 points in Game 5, and then you had Middleton scoring 32 and Holiday scoring 27 in Game 6. You know, they're playing great basketball. And then the story being, you know, well, maybe they're playing so well that they play better without Giannis. That is not a Giannis situation. In my opinion, that's a Coach Bud problem. I think he's a mediocre coach. I think these guys are playing their asses off and overcoming his mediocre coaching.
Well, he's on the chopping block until they made the
final. I mean, you know, if Lopez is so, has that kind of potential, put Giannis down low and play a high low big man, twin tower big man offense, and then have, you know, the guy down low come out and set some picks for the high man. But you can play two guys like that together, but Coach Bud does not seem to know how to do that. And he also doesn't seem to know how to get his team up. I mean, they came out flat. You know, you heard the NBA, the TNT crew crucifying them for the way they came out and didn't really have a closeout mentality in the first two games. But yeah, I think it's exciting to see two teams that have not been there in a long time, some up and coming young players. I think I'm looking forward to it. I don't see this as a snoozer like other people do.
Isn't this partially the story, though? I think Pope nailed it last week on our last podcast, that this is the story of two teams who got lucky because of injury. I mean, these are two teams that made the finals playing competition that were missing their far and away their best players. And this is a different series if Trae Young plays healthy all the way through. It's certainly a different
or DeAndre Hunter.
And of course, or whether the Bucks even make it if they had to face a full complement Nets team. So I think Pope kind of nailed it.
But that, you know, every team has to deal with that, including the Bucks, who played the last two games without Giannis.
Yeah.
And CP3 was out two games in the Clippers series with COVID.
Rooster, who are you rooting for in the finals?
The Suns, for sure. I think they're an exciting up and coming team. I think the Bucks are, you know, the Bucks are the Bucks. They're going to be the same team next year. You're right. A healthy Nets team would wipe them off the court. But the Suns are going to continue to get better. I think the Suns are going to be better next year than they are now.
That's an interesting thing to say, though, that a healthy Nets team because, you know, obviously you're thinking of the three guys, Harden, Durant, and Kyrie. But those guys, for as great as they are healthy. Is healthy a word you can use with any of them at any point? I mean, they're always hurt, right? They're always missing time. That's part of what you get when you put that team together. I mean, when you build these teams, you have to think, like, who's going to be there? Who's durable?
Right.
And that's part of what you get with the Nets. So, I mean, I hear your point. When all three of them are playing together and playing well, I mean, it's a juggernaut, right? It's probably right. the only right. team
but there's a probably this season a two-year that had window. A
threesome.
They were probably a two-year window with that team because of their health problems.
Bucks were going to lose with a healthy Kyrie and a healthy KD. Harden was irrelevant. If you have two out of the three,
maybe
you
maybe.
Can roll. Oh, no. Maybe. That was over.
I'm rooting for the Suns as well, but speaking of point guards, I think one of the more underrated point guards over the years in the NBA has been Drew Holiday.
Yep.
And he had a really nice career for the Sixers. He moved on to the Pelicans, where he had a really nice career. Now he's with the Bucks. And as Rooster pointed out, one of the games he fully put the team on his back. And I think one of the things the fans are going to see when they watch the NBA Finals is a great point guard matchup between CP3 and Drew Holiday. And if the Bucks do win, one person I'm definitely going to be happy for is Drew Holiday. If Giannis doesn't play, this is the Suns in six. And if Giannis does play, it's the Bucks in seven.
I got the Suns in six either way.
House, you have the Bucks winning at Phoenix in game seven, huh?
If Giannis plays. Wow. I think he will step up to the occasion if he plays, even if he's playing 80-90% healthy.
I got Suns in five.
His left knee is apparently day to day, but who knows what that means. I don't think there's any structural damage, but it sure looked bad at the time. It was like totally hyperextended.
Yeah, it looked really scary. So, you know, CP3 is interesting. I feel like he's just been like a throwaway trade guy, right? Like the last couple of years. It just seemed like he moved with, you know, some star got traded and CP3 went the other way or something like that for a bunch of years. And honestly, I mean, I can't even believe the guy's still playing. I feel like we've been talking about him as a superstar in the league for like my entire lifetime, it seems like, right? I mean, he's been around forever.
Yeah.
And at a high level.
Yeah, and his health hasn't been great either. You know, like I joke about that all these players going to wind up on the Knicks. Of all the potential candidates, he's the last one that I want because I just don't think he's going to be playing at this level for much longer.
Are we going to be talking more about CP3, Ayton, or Booker at the end of this series?
CP3.
Mm-hmm. Because of everybody in the league is rooting for him, and it would be a legacy moment for him.
Well, I'm talking about who has a better series. I mean, if Booker could have a breakout series.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think he's having a hard time breathing through that broken nose. He really hadn't played the same since, but he's the man. I mean, he's going to be the future of that team.
I think the fans really want to know what Milk thinks about the NBA.
Yeah, Milk. So
he's our specialist. He's our basketball specialist.
How surprised are you guys?
Ball, it's round. It bounces.
Yeah. Is Toronto still playing here? I don't even know. I really don't even know the answer.
The season ended for them.
Their season's over.
Their season ended, yeah.
How surprised are you guys? So for somebody like me who doesn't follow the NBA, and for our two Canadian listeners, how surprised are you guys of these two teams being in the finals? And which one would you be shocked if the Suns won? Or before the playoffs started, would you have said, yeah, I could see Phoenix winning this?
I think when we first started talking about the playoffs, those of us who follow basketball said, watch the Suns. They're a much better team. They just don't get East Coast exposure. We're all shocked about the Bucks because the Sixers looked unstoppable. They were the number one seed. And then the Nets, with just two out of their three guys healthy, looked right up there.
Bison, yeah, Bison needs the microphone. Well, he needs the microphone.
Wait a minute.
What are you going to say? The Wizards were going to go all?
No, but I mean, I did say, I think in the playoffs or before, watch the Bucks because they were starting to round.
You didn't sound like you knew what you're talking about. I felt like,
oh my god,
wow, he had a feeling there'd be some injuries along.
Yeah, well, but don't forget, too. In the West, you got to remember too that AD going down was a big
huge
change of what came out of the West.
No, but I give credit to Bison. When Pope did the mid-season recap, he talked about the collision course for the Sixers and the Nets, and we all talked about it. And then Bison jumped in and said, "You know, don't forget about the Bucks. They were the number three seed."
That is true. I forgot about that.
They're a good team.
I stand corrected.
And now I'm just rooting for him to win because I want somebody who refers to Giannis as the Greek yogurt to have to deal with him being the MVP of the finals or something. So I'm sort of hoping for that.
It just seems when you guys describe this matchup that it's always like, well, they kind of got almost like they got lucky because these other teams had injuries and you know, they've sort of gotten there because of that.
Injuries are, when we look back at the 2021 season, both regular season and postseason, injuries will be a major headline to it. And while this will be a worthy champion, regardless of whether it's the Suns or the Bucks, this
order in the court.
Injuries will be a part of it. I'm done.
Yes.
We're a little long there, but that's okay.
From way downtown.
So let's move on from hoops. It's going to be fun. I think we'll, because the NBA manages to drag on these series like a month, we'll probably have many more pods where we can talk about what's happening in the finals, right?
Oh, it's going seven games.
I think there's probably going to be like three more pods before it's over. Speaking of going seven games, Milk, let's talk a little NHL playoffs. And I hear that to make it more interesting, the city of Tampa is rooting for this to go seven games. Is that true? That's the city's on board.
I'm a little heated today about our mayor. I'll get to that in a second. I just want to say, usually I'm just going to say this series is over. Okay. This series is over. I was going to try to be nice about it. This is over. It may end tonight. Maybe they'll lose. I don't know, because they're going to throw it. But this has been an absolute dominating performance. Five goals to the Canadians to 14 for the Lightning. I've never seen, like, Vasilevskiy should get MVP of this entire finals. He's playing out of his mind. There's no way they're coming.
Well, that's
back.
About enough talk. I think that's enough hockey talk.
I'm planning my third vote parade of the year of the last 9 months. You guys are welcome to come down. By the way,
yeah.
So the Stanley Cup is going to go around the public's parking lot again.
Is it true you're all going to forfeit tonight instead?
Our mayor is an idiot. Okay, yeah,
tell everyone what the mayor
you've
did.
Ever heard.
First of all, when I saw the headline, I was like, "Oh, she wants us to lose tonight so that we come here. They come back to Tampa and win, and we're in at our arena, and it's great." Then I read the article, and she's like, "Yeah, you know, it'd be nice for them to get a win." And I'm like, what are you shitting me? First of all, she's never seen Karate Kid because, as we know, mercy is for the weak.
Sweep the leg. You have a problem with that.
No sensei.
No mercy.
Five of the
sweep the leg, Bolt.
Sweep the leg when they are down. You bury them. I want it over tonight. That cup is staying here for 12 months. Two in a row, eighth team to win back-to-back Stanley Cups. And that includes the Flyers, by the way.
Yeah, baby.
And the last team to come back from down 3-0, 1942 Toronto Maple Leafs.
Yes.
Ooh. Yes.
That's a Pope stat.
Shout out to
it ain't happening. This thing is over, and it's another championship for the city of Tampa, guys.
Milk, your mayor obviously has never played a team sport because you just – I mean, there's nothing harder to win than game four of any kind of a series.
What?
You got to win it. Just have to win
it. Can you imagine if we lose, then the pressure starts to build?
Oh, yeah. This is insanity. Yeah. It's insanity.
They asked John Cooper about it, our coach. You could tell how pissed off he was.
Yeah, he was like, it's never entering our minds. He's
like, yeah, we don't even talk about that. This team is really, really good. Unfortunately, due to salary cap issues, they're probably going to get a lot of them are going to get split up next year. So it's been a hell of a run for two seasons, and they deserve it. They're solid defense. Vasilevsky's been unbelievable. And
I don't think we really appreciate that the Islanders Bolts was the de facto Stanley Cup.
I was just going to say that.
Yeah.
That game, they won the Stanley Cup in game six against the Islanders.
The Islanders would have dominated Montreal too.
Yeah.
18 months ago, did you think that Tampa would be such a hated city?
Once Tom Brady decided to come here, I knew we would be.
Yeah.
Well, so just so we're keeping track, 9 months. We've got two Stanley Cups, potentially two. We've got a Lombardi. We do have a World Series. We played in it. We didn't win it.
I find myself rooting for the Blue Jays.
You're talking about the Major League Baseball tournament they had last year.
Yeah.
The tournament. Yeah.
Yeah.
It
was the round robin. Yes.
We're all going to become Blue Jays fans.
They are so annoying. Yeah, well, I wouldn't worry about
the Red Sox. The Red Sox are going to win the division.
Now that we can't cheat anymore in baseball, the Rays are terrible.
Well, so let's talk a little baseball then. Milk, congratulations on the Stanley Cup. Maybe that'll be the jinx you need.
But if we
hand it over to you. But let's talk a little baseball. I want to ask a question. We got the All-Star game coming up and the selections are out. But is anybody looking forward to the All-Star game? What are the general thoughts on the MLB All-Star game?
It's the Shohei Ohtani game, in my opinion. I'll tune in just to see him.
The home run derby should be fun in Colorado. Yep. I'll be flying out of there.
Yeah.
I think the game itself lost its relevance a number of years ago. I'm not that excited about the game. And by the way, a side note is what they're doing with the uniforms is just a travesty.
It's absolutely a travesty.
It's a travesty.
But, you know, I'm interested to see who some of these guys are because some of these names I don't even recognize. I mean, Bison, do you know who all these guys are? About the lineups?
No, I don't. In fact, I was going through it today, and I have to say, I mean, maybe half of them, I don't have any idea who they are. So do we want to give a rundown of who is?
Go for it.
You recognize Scherzer's name.
We're going to talk about the snubs. We'll talk about the snubs. But, I mean, here's the National League lineup. Corbin Burns. Wasn't that the guy in Major League?
In Major League,
He started in L.A. Law.
He could play a little third base, though.
That's right.
You Darvish, Pope, any reaction to that?
Well, you know.
Playing well for the Pods.
Another ex-Ranger.
Yeah. DeGrom, of course, who is DeGrom, who's, you know, is probably the greatest pitcher of all time at this point, but that's for another day. Kevin Gausman, Josh Hader, Craig Kimbrell. Craig Kimbrell back from the grave, I guess.
Yeah.
Really? I thought he was long gone.
Who does he even pitch for now?
Yeah, right? I mean,
is he on the Cubs still?
The Cubs. Yeah, he's with the Cubs.
Wow.
Marquez, Mark Melancon, who the Nats had for a couple years ago, who's had a good year. Alex Reyes, Trevor Rogers, Zach Wheeler, Brandon Woodruff.
Skipped over the Cy Young quickly, but go ahead.
The catchers, Buster Posey, and Realmuto.
You know, he's still around.
Yeah.
I know, right? What's that all about? First base Giants. Is Freddie Freeman, all right. Max Muncy. Second base, Adam Frazier.
Is that
anyone know?
Pirates?
Pirates. Met?
Yeah.
Ding, ding, ding.
The Pirates have an all-star?
Yeah. Well, everybody has to
have one, right?
You have to have one.
That's right.
You don't have
Ozzie
to have
Albies and Jake Cronenworth are the backups. The shortstop is Tatis, Brandon Crawford, and Trey Turner, who is finally getting a little respect. It was nice to see that. Third base is Arenado, and then Chris Bryant and Eduardo Escobar playing in his who? First. Yeah, Eduardo Escobar from Arizona in his first.
Jeez.
He's Arizona's only rep. I mean, has Arizona won a game this year?
They are so bad.
It's been a while.
Real bad.
And then the outfield, you've got Acuna, Jesse Winker from Cincinnati in his first.
Jesse Winker.
I don't
Nick
know Jesse Winker.
Castellanos, also his
he's
first.
Good.
He's dominating this year. Castellanos. Yeah,
those two guys are in their first game, both with the Reds. And then Mookie Betts, Brian Reynolds from Pittsburgh. So Pittsburgh has two. Schwarber, who won't be able to play, Soto, and Chris Taylor. Those are the outfielders in the National League. So
let me ask you this before you get to the American League. Besides Bison, can any of you guys name, if you take out Buster Posey and Mike Yastrzemski, can any of you guys name three players on the Giants who have the best record in baseball?
Well, I guess the pitcher Gausman is one of them. That's about
it. I know Longoria is on it only because he played for the Rays.
Oh, right.
And he's hurt.
Right. Maybe collectively we could name three.
Yeah, I don't think I could. And I think we do. I mean, we owe the Sanguinettis an apology. I think at the beginning of the season, we laughed off.
How are they this good?
The Giants.
I don't have any idea. Nobody saw this coming.
No.
I can't begin to tell you how terrible of a manager Gabe Kapler was when he was.
Yes, he still
Kapler,
is. He still is. They're winning
he's
despite
working magic.
He's
working
winning
magic.
Despite him.
Gabe unbelievable.
Kapler.
It's incredible. It doesn't make any sense.
All right. Sorry to interrupt you, Bison.
No, that's okay. Well,
who's in control of the order in the court? Button while you're talking.
Well, I'm just blowing through the players here. So here's the American League. Matt, these are the pitchers. Matt Barnes, Shane Bieber, Chapman, who we talked about earlier, can't get anybody out.
Right. I'm just hoping he's working out his problems during the All-Star game.
Cole, who, by the way, will be allowed to use Spider Tech during the All-Star game just for old time's sake, just so it makes it more interesting. Nathan Eovaldi, Kyle Gibson from Texas. There you go.
He's having a great year. Well, after getting shelled on day one.
Pope, Texas or Atlanta? I can always get that confused.
Go both, Pope.
No.
Go
We're both. In the American League, so that'd be
no
Texas.
One knows.
Liam Hendricks, Yusei Kikuchi, Lance Lynn, Ohtani, who we'll talk about a little more. Ryan Pressly, I missed one. Carlos Rodon and Gregory Soto, and then
Juan's cousin.
Yeah, and then the catchers. Somebody I believe in the baseball preview show said that watching Salvador Perez out of KC would be fun, and he is your starter. And then Mike Zunino, who's that?
Yeah, baby, that's our Sol Ray.
Is that the Sol Ray?
Yeah, we get one. That's pretty depressing. The Pirates have two.
How do you only have one?
And they're in second place in the.
It's ridiculous.
You guys are not a bad team.
No,
not a good team. Not a bad team.
Yeah, well, we don't have a lot of like.
They'd be leading your division, I think.
Because the Rays,
the Yankees would be in second place.
We don't
in the
have
NL
anybody
East.
Who's not. They're all kind of doing okay.
And plus, it's always been like this platoon team, both pitchers and in the field. Like, nobody plays a full season on
that team. Yeah, but this rookie you just called up is going to be a superstar.
He is. He's going to be good.
Yeah. He's already killing
next year.
Enough about Tampa Bay. Order in the court.
Y'all want to get back to order Tampa? In the court. Yeah. Vlad Jr. So here's your first baseman, Vlad Jr., who I think is got the most votes. He's like the youngest player to since they've been doing this to get to lead the league in votes.
He's having a crazy year, by the way.
Oh, ridiculous. I mean,
it's dominated.
He and Ohtani in the same lineup is murderers right there with just two guys.
The backups are Matt Olson and Jared Walsh, who both first timer. All three at first base are first timers. Second base is Marcus Semien, who's first time in the All-Star game, and Altuve. I can't believe they even let him in. He's got to hope he doesn't get to play, right? He doesn't want an at-bat, does he? The fans are gonna destroy him.
Altuve.
Shortstop is Bogaerts, and then the reserves are Bichette and Carlos Correa, another guy who shouldn't even be allowed there.
Oh God.
And then third base you have Devers from Boston in his first, and Jose Ramirez from Cleveland. The DH
So you've got Bichette, Guerrero, and Tatis, three kids, right?
Yeah.
I wonder if that's ever happened before in an All-Star
game. I don't know. Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
And we talked about that in the baseball extravaganza. Mm-hmm. And look at them. They are all in the All-Star game. So that's pretty cool. Yeah. Ohtani, Nelson Cruz, and JD Martinez are the DHs. And then the outfield is Trout, Judge, and Teoscar Hernandez from Toronto are your starters in the outfield. The reserves are Michael Brantley, Joey Gallo, Adolis Garcia, and Cedric Mullins.
Gallo is coming on.
So a lot of first timers in this All-Star game, which is fun. And by the way, Toronto, it's like, what in the world? I mean, we should be putting some futures bets on them winning the World Series, right? I mean, look at how many guys they have in their first time in the All-Star game.
What we said in our baseball preview was if they could get some pitching, they'd be scary, but they don't have any pitching.
Well, let's speaking of pitching and I mean, let's talk about Ohtani for a second. I mean, it is as amazing as what DeGrom has done this year has been. That story, I don't know that compares to what Ohtani's doing. I mean, this is unbelievable what we're seeing with him.
His home runs are like moonshots, one after another. I mean, he smashes the ball. And I really hope there probably won't be great ratings. There haven't been great ratings for the All-Star game of late. But I do hope that this is the coming out party nationally for Ohtani, because he's the most exciting thing to happen to baseball in a very long time. And there's been some great guys who've come along. Trout, what DeGrom is doing, you know, the Nat series of a couple years. There's been some exciting things. But a two-way player who is dominating is coming over from Japan. It's an incredible story. And I really hope fans tune in to see this kid play.
I mean, we talk about a 5-tool athlete. I mean, what is he? 6 tools? I mean,
yeah.
He's got an arm on top of everything else. I mean, look at his stolen bases. It's insane.
And he's a big dude. I mean, to be that fast.
Huge guy, right?
He might be the fastest guy on the Angels, and he's huge. He's just a specimen. My take on him that I shared with you earlier is he is such an amazing everyday player. I think on a team that was stacked with pitchers, they might consider just making him an everyday outfielder and not pitching him, because he does struggle to get the ball over the plate. He's not, you know, I know he made the All-Star game as a pitcher, but he's not like, you know, top five pitcher in the American League by any stretch. But 31 home runs at the All-Star break, and his RBIs are huge. He wins games single-handedly for a team that is terrible. I mean, he really is a superstar offensive machine and a good outfielder.
Rooster, do you think him being a pitcher is also is holding him back as far as his potential as a fielder and a hitter?
Not really, but I worry that the demands on a pitcher's arm are so extreme that, you know, one Tommy John surgery and you're out for a season and a half, right? I don't think you can afford to lose a guy like that for that long. He's just that good.
Do any of you guys know the terms of his contract, how many years he's lined up with the Angels?
No, but he's not being paid a ton. I know that. I think he's making like $2 million.
Well, listen, you have to assume at some point he signs for a ridiculous amount with the Yankees, whatever. But he can't stay with the Angels forever.
The flip side, Rooster, your point, though, is, you know, if him pitching every 5 days keeps him on an even keel or into the game more or something, right? You don't want to break that up. I mean, taking him out of that pitching role, does that affect his hitting? Which you wouldn't think. I mean, the natural reaction is no, let him focus on hitting, right? But this guy's so dominant, I wouldn't want to mess with it at all right now.
Right. No, I could see that too.
But
go ahead.
Just think about the abuse that you – I mean, these guys, they're icing their arms down. They're taking 5 days off. I mean, they need this guy in the lineup the next day as a hitter. So I think Rooster's right. I mean, long term, I have some concerns about having him be in a five-man rotation and trying to – I mean, how many games – is he taking a break or does he play every game? Does he get any rest?
He gets a little time off, but not much.
I think they DH him a fair amount.
Yeah,
they do.
But
they do.
He's a good outfielder. He should be playing right field every day.
So is this the greatest bargain in MLB history? I just looked it up. He just signed a 2-year extension in February. $8.5 million. He's making $3 million in 2021 and $5.5 million in 2022, and he'll be a free agent after next year. Hello,
Hello. Who's
the manager of the Angels right now? I mean, they're really a poorly run team.
You know, it's funny to hear you guys debate on, you know, whether he should play in the, you know, as a pitcher and as a batter, because I remember it's been a while since we had a two-way player in sports, but I remember those debates used to happen with Dion, you know, and, you know, that we haven't had a lot of two-way players in sports. Well, I don't know. Right. You know, should Dion even be on the offense playing any of those, you know? I think it goes to show just how special of a player that you are. Obviously, it's not affecting his hitting one little bit, the fact that he pitches every 5 days. And I hear you that the toll could take on him. But I think we're just looking, like you said, Rooster, it's a specimen. You know, he's that good.
No, I think he is that good, and he can handle it until the injury comes about. And I'm just saying, as an owner, as a general manager, when he signs the big contract, I might not be willing to take that risk.
Well, that team has to figure out how to get some pitching or something on it, because with, you know, Trout's out, I guess, a little while longer, but with Trout, Otani, and Anthony Rendon, by the way, who 2 years ago was looked at as an MVP candidate.
Right.
The fact that they can't put it together a little more is pretty surprising. But let's talk about a couple snubs. And I'm going to lead off on this one with how Max Scherzer is not on the All-Star team is just unbelievable. I mean, I think his ERA is, you know, like 2.6 or something this year. I mean, he's just... If you have to have
2.10, I think it's the lowest of his career.
It might be, If you have to have one guy other than DeGrom right now start a game for you who's just got the stuff and is a bulldog, I don't know that there's too many people you put ahead of Scherzer in either league. So that's a pretty serious snub. And I think, I mean, there is some deep pitching and you do have this rule that every team gets a guy on it, but geez, that's pretty outrageous. Anybody else come to mind as a snub?
The only other one that I thought was a snub, and maybe because I just saw him mash a couple against the Phillies, but I think overall Manny Machado's had a very solid year at third base for the Padres. And I was surprised to not see him as an all-star. That was the other snub that stuck out for me.
Well, it looks like we're getting more and more towards merit-based voting than we ever have been, because otherwise you would assume that LeMahieu would have made it based on the last 2 years. And he's starting to come back around, but he hasn't had a great first half of the season. But in past years, he would have been kind of a shoe-in just because, you know, you rest on your laurels from the previous few years. Not the case this year.
The guy that's hurt for the Rays, your stud pitcher, who is it?
Glasnow.
I mean, he didn't make it, right? I think that's a snub of sorts.
Definitely a snub.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, I guess they don't. I mean, he hasn't played in a while.
Isn't it the Rays who brought that position player in to pitch, and he went through all these gesticulations and dropped the ball? He should make it just for
it was that embarrassing. He was topping out at 48. That's kind of becoming a new trend now. You throw in the third baseman to pitch 50-mile-an-hour fastballs.
To throw the Ephus pitch, right?
Yeah. That was ugly.
Well, let's just do a real quick home run derby. It's worth watching. We don't know all the participants yet, so we don't want to spend too much time on it. But right now you got Ohtani, Pete Alonso, Trevor Story, Trey Mancini, which is, again, just a great story that we previewed this year, and Salvador Perez. Those are the current entrants in it. I guess we'll be finding out over the next week who's going to join them. But, you know, that should be a good time. I'll tell you, I never thought the home run derby was that great until I was at one live. And I mean, it was really an exciting event. It didn't hurt that it was the hometown at the time hero, Bryce Harper.
Who won it?
I couldn't remember his name for a minute. Yeah, he went on a tear at the end and just hit like 10 bombs in a row to win it. But it was like really one of the most exciting sporting events I've ever been at.
Didn't Alonso win the last one? I think Alonso won the last one. So yeah. if it's Alonso Ohtani final, like someone said, I don't know who said it about playing out in Colorado home runs. I mean, that could be pretty fun.
Yeah. Well, Alonso's back. Alonso's back right now.
Where's Alonso
seems to be over
from?
His injuries.
He's from Tampa. Let's
move on. Of course he won.
Moving right along. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Let's go.
That's what we do.
You know, before we leave baseball, one thing to watch since Major League crackdown on the pitchers doctoring baseballs, statistics for hitters are going up big time. The power hitters are starting to get traction. See Joey Gallo, Schwarber. I think we're going to see bigger stats in the second half. Just keep that, tuck that away and watch it.
And Garrett Cole might be in the minors in 3 months.
Yeah, and it's too bad we don't have time to touch on what Schwarber did, but really, I mean, I think like 17 home runs in 15 games. He's out now and going to be out for a while. So I think we probably saw the best of his season, but pretty remarkable what he did. House, any drama in the Olympics? What's going on there?
It's coming up. The Tokyo Olympics postponed will finally be played next month. And we'll have our big Olympic preview show coming up. We'll find out what all the Olympic sports, the SMQBs would have been in, what were it not for their injuries, but, the United States, normally dominates both in men and women's track and field. And this year was going to be, it still will be another year that they will dominate, for sure, someone who was likely to be on the Wheaties box, who was likely to be dominating the storylines of the Olympics, was a women's track and field star named Sha'Carri Richardson. And she's a 21-year-old athlete who many projected as the next FloJo, Florence Griffith Joyner, who was an all-around dominant women's track athlete. And Sha'Carri Richardson is expected to be the next one. But Sha'Carri Richardson, when she competed for the U.S. Olympic trials, as it turned out, tested positive for THC in marijuana. The story as it goes is that sadly, just before the U.S. Olympic trials, she lost her biological mother and was informed of it by a journalist. She was being interviewed and a journalist said, you know, I'm sorry to hear of your mother's passing. Do you want to give a comment about it? She went into basically shock. And between the loss and preparing now for the Olympic trials, she decided to cope with her mental health situation by ingesting THC, which she resides in Oregon. It's legal in Oregon. She didn't do anything illegal, but recently the U.S. Anti-Doping Agency, USADA, added THC to a banned substance. She tested positive, and as a result of testing positive, the minimum ban was 30 days, and it includes stripping any results. She finished first in the U.S. Olympic trials with, you know, not a record speed, but a very, very fast time. And she was sure to be the favorite for the 100 meter. And now she can't race. There has been enormous, I don't know if you want to call it backlash. There's not that been that much debate. A lot of folks say this is silly. You know, folks in the Olympics can use Xanax. They can use prescription opioids. Most people don't consider THC a performance-enhancing drug. You know, you've got folks, you know, on the men's, I'm not to say that the men's basketball team, that any of them smoke or ingest marijuana, but the NBA doesn't even test for marijuana anymore. So there's all kinds of questions about double standards that some athletes can smoke or ingest marijuana, but track and field athletes can't, and it doesn't even enhance performance. But look, she apologized immediately. She issued a tweet on July 1st saying, I'm human. And, you know, she's given a couple interviews where she acknowledged that she did have a banned substance. And I guess if rules are rules, it's really kind of cut and dry. Now, because they can backdate to the original failed, you know, when she failed the test, they can backdate it through the time that where 30 days would elapse would end before August 6th when the 4x100 relay takes place. And right now, she's not yet been announced the 4x100 relay team, but I think that will be an enormous storyline and probably one of the biggest nights of ratings in all of the Olympics. If she runs that 4x100 relay for the women's team for the United States, there will be massive, massive ratings because people want to see her get a chance to get a gold medal. But I'm curious to see whether any of you guys are of the mindset that there should be some kind of exception or anything that would allow her to run it, or rules are rules. And it's a shame and it's heartbreaking, but she shouldn't be able to run. That's it.
Anyone? I'll go ahead. Go ahead, Bison. You go.
Well, I mean, listen, yeah, rules are rules, but we don't apply our laws by computer. This is why we have judges, right? Judges can take in juries, take in all the facts when looking at the rules and the facts and the scenarios. And you know, we don't just have a cookbook sort of justice system in this country. And we're not even talking about you know, the justice system. This is sort of a different setting as it is. It's outrageous to me. I mean, it's outrageous that there is no ability to consider the facts, to consider the situation. I mean, the Olympics come around every 4 years. This being every 5 years, I guess, in this particular case because of COVID. But the fact that there is no way to come up with a more just result here is a failure of the system, in my opinion. I get the rules are rules. I mean, you know, it's Sure. That's kind of an easy way to lay it down and say, hey, you broke the rules. You know, you got to live with the consequences. But in this case, it just seems like this isn't just, it doesn't make sense.
Does the substance even help? Does it help you run faster or anything? I mean, what?
No,
I wouldn't right. know.
What'd you say? I wouldn't know Pope.
No.
I know for a fact. I know for a fact it does not.
Pope doesn't run fast.
I mean, yeah. Let's be honest. Don't you think it would have the opposite effect? I don't get it.
I was only going to answer Milk's question to say that I think there's been a stupid argument that a very few have made that says, you know, it could calm people in a way that they could get focused to allow them to run fast, but it doesn't enhance your performance. It doesn't right. enhance
drink
your
alcohol.
I think that's
allowed to drink alcohol.
Absolutely true. Yeah, you can drink alcohol. Yeah,
I mean,
I don't believe that's true either.
I think it's true that what you said, that it does not enhance performance. And I know this is going to surprise some of you, but I disagree with Bison. I'm not going to be a hypocrite. I think marijuana should be legalized federally in all 50 states. I think it does have terrific medicinal qualities, but we're not talking about a U.S. justice system here. We're talking about an international body, and the Russians are prolific drug cheaters. And so rules have to be the rules. And she knew that. She knew that if she put THC into her system, she could be disqualified. And she chose to do it. And choices have consequences. Just like our conversation last week about the vaccine, choices have consequences. Choose not to be vaccinated. You screw your team. Look what happens.
But was this an international committee or was this the U.S. Olympic Committee?
The U.S. She violated with USADA.
What, really? So this had nothing to do with international rules?
No. What she violated was the U.S. Anti-Doping Agency recent addition of adding THC as a banned substance. It's a recent addition to a banned substance.
Doesn't make a whole lot of sense either.
Well,
I don't understand.
In the words of their immortal Rosanna Dana, yeah. Never mind.
Well, that's funny.
Well, that's a generational really one for you listeners.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
I'm more arguing that this thing shouldn't even be on this list. Like,
yeah, I think we all agree. Stupid. Yeah.
But Rooster, you do make a good point that, okay, you have this list, you know
what's on it.
You know what's on it.
Why are you going to risk your chances?
You could go get drunk. I mean, I
she's not arguing ignorance. She knew.
Yep.
Yeah. Right.
She said that? She said
I'd agree it shouldn't be on the list, but it is on the list and she knew it.
But I don't necessarily disagree that there shouldn't be consequences. My thing is the penalty here for the crime doesn't match and there's no one to make that determination. It just doesn't feel just to me. That's my gut on this, is it just doesn't feel right.
I agree.
It doesn't feel right. And I think Rooster's comments are well taken. I mean, if you could come up with justifications in this situation, you could probably come up with justifications in a lot of situations. And then what's the point of rules? It's a shame. It should not be the rule, but it was the rule. I think she took a chance, and it's a real, real shame. It's a totally different subject as to whether or not it should be a banned substance. But as long as it is a banned substance, I have to think that whatever state of mind she was in, even depressed and sad, when she smoked it, ingested whatever she did, she had to have thought for one second before, is this going to jeopardize my test results? Or was she thinking, I'm going to take a chance that it won't show up or they won't test me? I don't know. She had to know she was going to be tested.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. The whole story makes me want to punch someone in the face. And so I think that's a good place to move right into our punchable face of the week.
It's this week's punchable face.
We have some stellar candidates this week, guys. It was a race to the bottom, let me tell you. Here's who was under serious consideration. And we don't always do this, but Pat Beverly was the most I guess, egregiously obvious on a television screen from the standpoint that after they were about to lose the Western Conference Finals, he came up and shoved CP3 hard from behind and knocked him down. Some people would say CP3 was acting. No, he got pushed really hard, wasn't expecting it, went down hard. You know, Pat Beverly is not a beloved player in the league. He's a little 6'1 irritant, but you kind of got to respect him. Came up through the European League, played the D League. So I don't think he deserves the punch this week, you know, maybe a little shove, just kind of like he gave CP3. Trevor Bauer, and I'm going to dance around this one, and if you guys want to fill in the details, feel free to, but he's under 7-day administrative leave by Major League Baseball on top of a TRO for an alleged consensual encounter with a woman twice.
Well, alleged by him.
Well,
that's not what she's alleging.
She's alleging it wasn't consensual. So I guess it ultimately comes down to what do consent mean. But there's text messages where she has, you know, asked him to choke and punch her, and he did that. And I think he did a little bit more, and he did it in a very rough way. And so clearly, you know, the evidence is, you know, she's got bruises and other marks, and you know, it got a little out of hand, and you guys are feel free to jump in on that one if you want. But the whole nation turns its eyes to that little football team on the Potomac, though, for our true punch today. Yes, Bison, the team formerly FKA, formerly known as the Washington Redskins, when all of this happened. So at least the Washington football team is clean. Danny Snyder, the owner, I guess, maybe general manager at a time too, he hired an independent counsel a couple of years ago that was supposed to be independent. And for our listeners, I did quotations independent. He hired an independent counsel to do a thorough investigation of the culture of the team after many complaints of sexual harassment, verbal abuse, bullying made by employees, particularly female employees, especially cheerleaders over the years. So this investigation was supposed to be thorough, and it was supposed to get to the bottom of what happened. Well, this week, We have the findings, and the findings are contained. You can't see it, but I have a piece of paper because there are no findings. There are no facts. There's no conclusion. There's no written report. There won't be one. There is no accountability. It's a $10 million fine. They've asked him to step down from football operations. And, you know, instead of bringing somebody independent in to run the football team while they're doing further investigation, who does the NFL say can run the team? Oh, that would be his wife, the co-CEO, Tanya Snyder. So $10 million, no written report, no factual findings. Just push it under the rug. I don't know if I want to punch Snyder or the NFL harder, but this was clearly a cover up. We're never going to know the truth. Dan Snyder's going to take over the team operations again soon enough. It's in the past. I feel bad for all these women who, you know, stake their reputation by making complaints. They're victimized once again. You know, I think it's a black eye for NFL, and I'd like to punch Danny Snyder really fucking hard. Bam.
I don't
knocked up.
I the only thing I disagree with you, Pope, on this is I really think the NFL is who deserves the punch on this. I mean, the NFL took over the investigation from the football team organization, and the fine was administered by the NFL. Al Galdi, who is a podcaster in DC, actually a guy who went to high school with my brother and played baseball with my brother and has an excellent sports podcast in DC. He does a really good job covering this whole story. And he did the math and said, when you compare the worth of Dan Snyder to the penalty, it's as if a person who's worth $100,000 got a $285 ticket. That's the equivalent of this $10 million. And so, good job on that, Al. That was put it in perspective. And the part about Snyder stepping down as CEO, you know, that's alleged that was part of the deal, right? That's not actually out there in the public that he was suspended. What happened was a week ago, he said Tanya was becoming co-CEO. And then about the same time the report came out, he said she was going to run the day-to-day operation so he could focus on a new stadium deal moving forward. I mean, there's no doubt this was a negotiated deal. And this goes to why I think the NFL is really who deserves the punch here. Snyder's a weasel, always has been, always will be. He did so many things over the last year that were transparent of him trying to, like, taking the name Redskins away. That was part of his trying to stay in good graces with the league because he knew how bad this was. And the fact that the league, look, these owners, they cover for each other. And that's what this is all about. The owners don't want somebody coming in and taking a team away or suspending another owner or doing anything like that. So they gave this slap on, it's not even a slap on the wrist. It's just, it's insulting. It's brutal. And so I would put the punch on the NFL because you can't expect anything less from Snyder.
But, you know, a week ago when the WTFs announced that they were hiring a co-CEO for about a half a day, they tried to spin it as, look at us, Renaissance man, we're hiring a woman as our co-CEO. And then comes out, oh, it's his wife.
Yeah. I just think that Pope, that was amazing how you really well done. I think that they both deserve it. You remember when a couple years ago there were some really bad assault incidences in the NFL, and the NFL started doing like a public service announcement program, and there were commercials, and they were trying to take it very seriously. I just think it's a joke that, you know, if Sean Payton puts a bounty on a player or something like that, you lose, or Belichick, you know, cheats by looking at game film, you lose draft picks. You're affected in actual competition. But when a team objectifies women and a pattern and a, you know, in a years and years of pattern behavior, and there's no penalty that affects the competition on the field, I think the NFL is showing its stripes. I mean, the right penalty here had to have been something that hurts the team that plays on the field. Then you're saying that we're taking this issue seriously. If the fine is the pencil's budget, then forget it. It's nothing. And it's interesting to hear. I didn't know that stat. $285 ticket, $100,000. That's crazy. The penalty here needed to be in a way that affected the team's competitive advantage.
Well, the penalty should have hurt the owner. That's the problem. These owners are so up there in the superpower zone. They're used to going, you know, before Epstein died, these guys were all going out to his little island, Snyder and Kraft. I mean, you know, they're out there, and they don't want anyone looking over their shoulders telling them they can't do this. It's okay to penalize Ray Rice, you know, for his indiscretions, mm-hmm. because he's a player, but the owners, they're off limits. They, you know, they can do whatever they want, and that's the way they want to keep it.
Yeah. By the way, I'm just going to go on the record and say that Trevor Bauer should be suspended indefinitely until the investigation is complete, because this is pretty egregious. So yeah, I hope at the end of those 7 days, he's suspended indefinitely.
Yeah, and she's not the only one.
Is he scheduled to start against the Nats coming up or something?
No, he missed his start against the Nats, but I just think that story is pretty egregious.
It is, and she's not the only woman making those claims.
All right, well, Rooster, I think that you have a little special presentation that you want to give today before we wrap up, huh?
Yes. So Marv Albert, announced at age 80 that he's retiring after the last game of the Bucks Hawks series after 55 years in the business. And Adam Silver, the commissioner, came out and said, Marv has been the soundtrack for basketball fans for nearly 60 years. And, you know, that's it sort of tracked my life. You know, as a child, I was a Knicks fan. And you know, back then when I was a small child, there weren't many nationally recognized sports casters, play-by-play announcers who chose the NBA as their first, you know, love. And Marv was kind of the first guy who was like a really talented, funny, smart play-by-play guy who loved basketball first. And he was the voice of the Knicks for a long time. He started in 67, made the famous Willis Reed call. He was there, you know, through Ewing, and did 13 NBA finals. He was kind of the voice of the finals during the Jordan years, voice of NBA sports for many, many years, and then TBN. And, you know, if that was the end of the story, this would be a really sad, sad occasion. And we'd be celebrating one of the all time greats, you know, Hall of Fame announcers, but it's not the whole story. Marv was a freak on top of being one of the greatest play-by-play guys in the history of sports. You know, like Humpty Humped, he liked to bite, and you know what? That's fine if that's consensual, man. That's fine, Marv.
Didn't really expect that reference either.
The problem is that Marvelous used to like to entice some of the housekeeping staff at the hotels into his room, and in a trial in 1997, two women testified that he lured them into his room and then sodomized them against their will and bit them in addition. And, you know, this wasn't a he said, she said thing. Marv pled guilty to a misdemeanor assault and battery, worked out a deal, and it was a misdemeanor. He served exactly 0 days in jail for this. And was hired back by NBC in 1999, and then eventually became the voice of the Knicks again until Mike Breen took over, and back to TNT eventually. So, you know, just like I want to be consistent here. It's what I said about Kobe Bryant. The man was a genius on the basketball court. But I don't like the way that the sports entertainment business swept under the rug the whole Colorado incident. You know, he was accused of raping this woman in Denver, and he basically paid her off. Marv had similar accusations, and, you know, the whole NBA community, Reggie Miller and everybody else right now, wants to just pretend that never happened. Well, it did, and he pleaded guilty to it. So I grew up loving the guy, and I acknowledge his greatness, but I'm not going to celebrate him as a person.
Well, I think what's interesting is that was back in 1997 when he pled. He was suspended for 2 years by NBC. He came back. That would not happen today. He would be drummed out of the business with no chance for coming back. Times are so much different now. But when he came back, I guess in his defense, he lived, you know, as far as we know, he didn't do anything else wrong. And he became the great, you know, Marv Albert, as we've all known and loved his play-by-play. I think it was just a unique time, and you know, I don't know. He's 80 years old. Guy didn't look like a day over 50.
His hair is a year old.
I enjoyed him. I am going to miss him.
You know, Pope, he was the great Marv Albert before he did this, before 1997. He was great. He was awesome. And I just don't, I just don't think you can say that, you know, when he came back and in 99, he lived a rape free life. So bully for him.
But, you know, we look at him in 2021 glasses, Rooster. Back in 1999, I mean, were you going around saying, I can't believe Marv Albert's back. I'm not going to listen to him. He's a rapist and a biter.
I thought right? He was a freak. Yeah, I was a little pissed off that they took him back after all that. Yes.
I don't know. Our 1999 glasses are a lot different than our 2021 glasses.
I also had children who were older, you know, were 10-ish at the time. So it was important to me not to be down with that.
Milk, how are your 1999 glasses?
They're still in the womb.
These things. Yeah, exactly.
It's a complicated legacy. That's what it is. It's a complicated legacy with some really, really dark, terrible parts to it. And you know, I mean, the part about it is that we'll never know how many other people were either assaulted or affected by him. And that just, you know, we don't know what happened. So it's, you're right. You can appreciate what he accomplished, but you can't look at it without acknowledging, the dark parts of Marv Albert.
I think if we're talking about a broadcaster, one of the best that we've had the privilege to listen to is Don in the Booth. I think if we're talking about the person, I think it's like Rooster said, you know, as a broadcaster, he was great. As a person, he doesn't probably deserve the kind of accolades he's getting right now. But if we're talking about the broadcaster, and I don't think you can ever divorce one from the other because the broadcaster is the person. But as a broadcaster, Marv Albert was one of the best, and I think his voice will be missed from the broadcast booth.
True.
All right, guys. Anybody got anything else?
You guys have brought me down. I'm going into a Stanley Cup final right now.
Yeah, man. Let's go.
Milk, tonight, congratulations, I guess.
Tonight,
Milk.
Guys, tonight. Let's get back to talking about Tampa.
Sweep it tonight, Milk.
Yeah. Right? Sweep the leg and skate the cup.
Will the mayor be on the chief float?
If they come back and lose this series, she will not be reelected.
What? Oh, no. What kind of panic will set in, though, if you lose the game tonight? Just the one.
Pressure.
Utter. It's going to be
utter.
Really, really bad.
Well, you guys in six, man.
Good luck.
Six.
None of us are rooting for you.
Good. I am. I'm still rooting for you, Bill. Let's go.
Have a good week.
See you.